Welcome to Q&A with TNK. They've surfed the interwebs. They've contemplated, ruminated, and speculated. They've checked the teletype, and now they're ready to answer your questions. Here are your hosts, Tiffany and Kristen.
Hello, and welcome to Q&A with TNK. I'm Kristen.
And I'm Tiffany.
Good morning.
Good afternoon.
Or good evening. That was a good intro.
Yeah, I like our addition.
I do too. That was really good. So it's 7 a.m. where Tiffany is.
Yeah.
So, and it's 9 a.m. where I'm at, because I live in Minnesota and Tiffany lives in Oregon.
And
Oregon. Oregon. Not Oregon or Oregon.
Nope.
Oregon.
Oregon.
I've learned how to say it.
You have. You're good at it. I recently learned that Oregonians are the fastest talkers.
Really?
Yeah. Isn't that a weird thing to think about? Do you know what I talk fast? Do I talk fast? I don't think
You don't. You don't talk fast. I found out this morning, I don't know, it was a Facebook thing, so who knows if it's true or not, but Minnesota is one of the smartest states in the United States.
Oh, snap.
Uh-huh. Minnesota and Massachusetts. Yeah, totally.
Awesome. Those end states. So for those of you that don't know, we want to talk a little bit about our recording process for a second. Right now, we are on Skype looking at each other and recording what we say. And we're just, hey, hanging out on the internet.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome.
And that's how we hang out.
Yeah, we've only met one time in person.
Yeah.
On Fun.
Mm-hmm.
We hope to see each other again soon.
Yeah. We have dreams of a Q&A with TNK road trip.
Yeah, on the road with Q&A. And, oh no, on the road with TNK is what it would be. Because your name doesn't start with a Q.
No, and yours doesn't start with an A.
No. So, the question, do you want to tell our listeners what the question is?
Our question is, how can early childhood education as a profession battle the invisibility we experience with regards to being heard, accepted, respected, and valued by society as a whole? From Heather in Nova Scotia. That is an excellent question. Can I tell you that this is one of the first questions we received? And true to good learning, we are now ready for it.
How long have we been doing this?
I don't know, since like September, October?
How many episodes have we recorded? Do you know?
Yeah, I do. We have recorded 22. This is number 23.
Excuse me. That's a lot.
Yeah.
We like to talk.
We do. We're verbal processors, maybe.
Right. So what was your first initial, when we said, let's do this question, what was your first initial, like, okay, what am I going to talk about first?
I actually circled and starred the word professional.
Okay. And why?
In that question, she talks about ECE professionals.
Yeah.
As a profession.
Right.
And I think that is the first key to being heard by anyone in work environments, is being professional.
Right.
You have to be put together. You have to know what you're saying. You have to come across as somebody who should be listened to.
Totally.
Kristen, you have a better way to phrase this, I think.
Yeah, I am going to, since you coined the term teachering a few episodes back, I'm going to coin the term experting. So when I think of how you can be seen as a early childhood, like a professional, and know what you're talking about, is you need to be seen as an expert. So I Googled how to be an expert.
In true early learning fashion.
Totally. Because, you know, we've got so much information at the tips of our fingers. So I found zenhabits.net, and the guest post is from a person named Corbett Barr, and he has a blog called Expert Enough. Mm. Yeah, and I kind of clicked into Expert Enough, but I really like this post because it gives like five little things on how to be an expert in something. Mm-hmm. And I think it's very applicable to just how to be a professional or how to be seen. I think people look at experts like, oh, you know it all. And if you say it's this way, then it should be that way. Mm-hmm. And they believe everything you say sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you want people to believe what you say. So you need to be an expert. Do you think?
I mean, I think about that, like when you go to a really good conference and you leave the conference being like, yeah, yeah, yes to everything. Even if you're like, I don't know if I believe in that all the way, but I'll give it a shot.
Totally.
I think that is the sign of an expert.
Mm-hmm. So I don't know. The first one he says is realize that expert is a relative term. And then he goes into how being expert enough is good enough. Like, you can only, I mean, we're always learning. So even if you're expert on something, you're still always learning. So even though you think you know it all, there's always more to know.
Would that be a sign of an expert? That you never stop learning?
I think it would be.
Yeah.
I think that there has to be like a balance of learning and doing.
Mm-hmm.
So you can do, I mean, if you've been working for 25 years and kind of doing the same thing, but not spending time on learning on your own as much, mm-hmm. Maybe it's time to make a switch. And I think that that was something else, too, that was brought, like when I Googled how to be an expert, that was something that I saw across different posts, is that there has to be a balance of learning and doing. So you can't just learn and never do, because you're not really an expert then, because you need to actually do something in order to be able to learn it well, mm-hmm. maybe, for some people, not all people. But and if you spend all, you know, doing and not peeling into things and becoming more knowledgeable on things, you might fall short too.
Yeah. Ooh, I like where this is headed already.
Yeah.
That,
what do you...
I immediately identify people in my head, or like, not necessarily people, but stereotypes of people that do and don't ever stop to keep learning. And those would be, shout out to our 90s Cookie Cutter Roots episode.
Mm-hmm.
People that, this is what I was taught in teaching school 35 years ago. And I'm really good at that, and I'm going to keep doing it. And not ever thinking about how are you going to expand your practice.
Or right.
How are you going to, you know, every society has learned so much about education in 35 years. How could you ignore that new knowledge?
Right. So other ways, I think, how can you be an expert? What if you write a book?
Does that make you an expert?
Well, I think that the general public would see, like, oh my gosh, you published a book. Like, you must know what you're doing.
Yeah. I guess that would be another aspect of this. Who are you hoping sees you as an expert?
Yeah.
Are you hoping that your families see you as an expert at 3, 4, and 5-year-olds? Or mm-hmm. 8th grade? Or, you know.
Yeah.
Are you hoping that your students view you as an expert in the topic that you teach? Are you hoping that other teachers view you as an expert at teaching? That is all relative, I think.
Totally.
Yeah.
So if you're not going to write a book, what about blogs?
I was going to talk about the book a little bit more.
Oh, okay, go.
Just the nature of writing a book, you have to learn so much about that one very specific thing.
Right.
You would absolutely be an expert in whatever that thing was you wrote about.
So you should write a book about.
I'd hope you were.
Right. So the process of writing a book seems completely daunting. I would have no idea where you even start.
No.
How do you even start to write a book? We'll have to ask the Loose Parts ladies when we get to talk to them.
And we should ask our upcoming special guest. Because he has written a book or two.
In a couple episodes, mm-hmm. we're going to be talking about what is
school policy.
Yeah. So, well, you'll have to tune into that one.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You're up for our special guest. Should I say who it is?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, our special guest is Randy Traney, Dr. Randy Traney, and he's the superintendent of Corbett School District, which is where I work.
It's going to be a good one.
Yeah.
I'm excited to pick his brain.
Ooh, yeah.
Okay, so if writing a book seems like, yeah, right.
Blog.
Blogging. Blog! Or
Blog.
even just like one thing I do for my families. I don't know if the families that are at Butterfly Hill, who knows? I think they see me as an early childhood professional. I don't know if they see me ex as an expert.
Oh yeah, there's a difference between those things.
Yeah.
Ah.
So I don't know. I'm now that I'm kind of like thinking about this and realizing that maybe I should be viewed as an expert, and then maybe I'll be, I don't know, maybe then I won't feel like I have to like push so hard to get people to believe what I'm saying. Like when I talk
Yeah.
about how children learn through play, I often find that it's a very hard thing to talk to parents about because they don't understand it. And then the next question is always, after you've talked about play for 15 minutes and how children learn, their next question is, so when is the academic learning time? And I get so worn out. So maybe if like I'm seen as an expert, they would take me more seriously and I wouldn't have to spend so much time and energy explaining all the time.
Yeah.
So
Do you are is it current families that you have to explain to all the time?
no, new
Okay.
families. Yeah, like people touring the school. Yeah. So I think it's that time of year right now, so I get a little bit stressed out and worn out, and it's a couple families a week that come in that I have to talk about playful learning and try to get them to change their mind about, because most people come in with the view of preschool being academic style learning in our area. And so to get people's mind changed on that a little bit, it's very difficult.
Yeah.
So blogging could be a good tool to use for expert early childhood education professionals.
Yeah.
Facebook, social media. What else do you think? Sharing articles by other people. I mean,
Yes.
you don't
That's
have to like reinvent the wheel
right.
all the time.
That's on my short list. You need to be well researched and well read to be considered a
Yes.
professional. And that means, just like you said, not reinventing the wheel, sharing things that other people have taught you,
Yes.
knowing where to look when someone asks you a question that you don't know the answer to, knowing when you don't know the answer.
Yeah. Your mug is cute. Your coffee
Thanks.
mug is cute.
It's adventure time.
Oh, that's
Come
so
on, grab
sweet.
your friends.
How funny. I don't even know what that
Oh, it's the best cartoon.
is.
Ah, it's one of my faves.
Oh.
Thinking more
I don't.
about being a professional, I like this distinction between being a professional and being an expert. I think a lot about how to turn things into baby steps and that jump from being a teacher. Maybe it's, maybe you haven't been doing this very long, maybe it's your first year. Jumping from that to being an expert sounds daunting.
So
And
is there like a steps like so you go from teacher to teacher professional, but I don't know, you are also a professional as a teacher.
Yeah.
But and
Professional
then is
seems
the
like a thing that is a personality trait,
Yeah.
less
Yeah.
than expert, which is a active working to become an expert.
Right. But I also think I have found there are many times where I'll do like a presentation and I add in lots of little funny things about my family, and it's sometimes silly and goofy and maybe endearing. And I think that that's one thing that draws people to me is that I'm personable. So I think that you can be professional because I feel like I am professional, but also personable.
Yeah,
So you want to have a, like, there's a,
they're
like,
not
there's a
mutually
balance
exclusive.
there.
Yeah.
Right. So being professional, that when I hear that term, I think, ooh, like You don't want to see anybody. You don't want anybody to like ever hear you, like say a bad word or, well, and you don't want to swear
you
anywhere.
Only
as a
wear
teacher.
A suit everywhere you
right,
go.
Right, and people don't see the real you. Like I think there's a, if I were strictly professional and not personable, it's like bad bedside manner for a doctor.
Yeah.
You know, kind of. So yeah. You have to be personable and professional.
Yeah. I think it's a matter of changing those levels in different situations too.
Yes, it's like a dance.
Yeah.
It's a dance according to the situation that you're in.
Yeah. If I'm in an IEP meeting, I'm going to crank up that professional.
Yes.
And if I'm meeting a family for the first time on a tour, I'm going to crank up the personable.
Yes.
It Ooh, changes like depending on, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Are we experts, kind of? Are we expert enough? We might be expert enough,
I think
right?
We're expert enough.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and one thing that I read, oh, listen to this, though.
Yeah.
This might crank up our expert enough fish. One thing that I did read throughout all the different little Google, you know, Google search sites that I found on how to be an expert said podcast.
Yeah. That's us.
No, we got to check that one off the list. See, we could be expert enough.
Yeah.
Yeah. So podcasts. And I think, like, I'm trying to think about how can I, like, apply this to myself? So I think I'm gonna put a thing on our preschool webpage now that, like a little more of a bio on me and where you can find my work at, and because I don't have that. And so maybe when people like first are looking at our the website is another huge thing. So that's like sometimes the first impression that people have of your program. If you have a website or a Facebook page, that needs to be very professional. It needs to be well written so that there's no typos or grammatical errors.
It needs to look professional. It needs
totally.
To reflect your level of professionality to the max, I think.
Yeah.
And it doesn't mean you can't have content that's personable, but if it's all Comic Sans and typos,
yeah,
you're off on the wrong foot.
Totally. So, I don't know. Maybe that's, I mean, there's probably experts out there on how to create, you could Google that, how to create a expert website or a very, just a good website, a good, it's like a storefront for your business is what a website is.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you want to keep it clean and have it look really good.
Yeah.
That's good content on there. Yeah. So, I might have to do some work on mine.
Yeah, now that I'm thinking about it, I'm like, ooh, yeah, I feel like my website is not, it's one of those things that you set up and forget it. It's like a crock pot.
Yes.
It's like, okay, I did it's fine. It's running. And then suddenly 3 days later, you're like, what is that smell?
Or I've cooked meat in the crock pot overnight, and it, like, don't do that because you will wake up in the middle of the night smelling beef, and it is
yeah.
so gross. Ugh.
I did that with a chicken stock once. I was like, I'll just, like, boil it on low all night. And the condensation was so bad, I woke up, like, sweating chicken stock. Like, what is this sticky feeling in the house? It's raining chicken.
Oh, that's hilarious. Chicken. Oh my gosh, I have a chicken story. Do I have time to tell it? No?
Yes.
Really fast?
Yeah, really fast.
I have on some crazy athletic pants right now, and I went out to feed our chickens, and we have like 5 roosters. That's too many. We're getting rid of, we're going to like kill some of them and eat them.
Yum, yum, yum.
Sorry if you're not, if you're a listener who doesn't, we're like, you know, starting to be homesteaders. So, you know, we eat our stuff.
Yeah.
Anyway, 2 roosters straight up attacked me this morning.
What?
I've never, oh my gosh, it was so scary. I almost peed my pants. It was so scary. And my kids were all in the van, thank goodness, because they were, I had to kick them. Like, I kicked them a few times because they
Whoa.
Were attacking me.
Eat those ones
and
first.
I had to, run into the van and shut the door. And I couldn't even give them water because they were, I think it's the pants that I have on. They're like crazy athletic-y,
Oh yeah, like
pants.
a geometric print.
Stripey.
Yeah.
Yes. It was so scary. And so I get in the car and my kids are like, I go, oh my gosh, I just got attacked by roosters. And my kids are like, Mom, they're just chickens. They're not gonna hurt you. I'm like, that was like the scariest thing that's happened to me in a long time. Just wait until it happens to you. I'm not gonna feel bad for you.
That's
Anyway, that was my chicken story.
a good personable moment.
Yes. It is a personable moment. See, those are the things that like that is moments like that is something that I would bring up. Like if I had a parent meeting and chickens came up, I would say, "Oh my gosh, I have to tell you this." And get people to laugh. And I think that laughter is a really good tool for helping people feel comfortable with you. So,
Yes, absolutely. And you can still have laughter and be professional.
Totally.
Totally.
One thing that we're doing in my program is we have a book club and we read a book. Right now we're reading How to Talk So Kids Will Listen and Listen So Kids Will Talk.
Awesome.
Not sure of who the author is. I wish I had written that down so I could cite that, but
I
Tiffany
can
will.
look that up while you
So
talk more about your book club. Who
the
attends
book
your book
club,
club?
all parents of preschool students that are current, and there's usually like, I don't know, between six and I think the most we had at one time was 10. But we read the story and then and they've all heard me say this, like I am 100% a better teacher. And I say this about myself and I don't know. I think many professionals feel it. I'm a better teacher than I am a mother, I feel. And I can very much apply everything that I read to my teaching life, but it's very hard for me to apply it home. And we're going to talk a little bit more about balancing home and work. I think that's going to be a good episode to even just help me personally, like compartmentalize things. So, anyway, they all, we'll talk about something and then they all look to me like, well, how do you do it? And I'll say, okay, well, this is how I do it at school. That is not how I do it at home. And they all know that it's hard for me to do those, like to do some of the things that I do at school at home, like how to, when it's your own children, it's just a different ball game.
Yeah,
And
you have a totally different relationship with your own kids.
yes. So, anyway, I think that that's a really good thing to do is to hold a book club and have read that book before, you actually hold the book club so you know what the book is about. And then when you're chatting about it, the parents just naturally look to you because you're the professional in the field and you can offer a lot of good advice. And many times when we're at a book club, I hear, oh, I'm so glad that you're my child's teacher. And so that's just a really good way to build up rapport. And then they talk about that with their spouses. And then it kind of just spills over into everything. Well, here's what Kristen says, or here's what we talked about at book club. And yeah, so that's another really good way.
Yeah. How to Talk So Kids Will Listen and Listen So Kids Will Talk is by Adele Faber and Elaine Maslish.
Yeah, it's a really, it's like a huge bestseller. It's a good one.
Yeah, I've heard great things about it. I haven't read it yet.
Yeah, it's a good one. Yeah, maybe when you have kids.
I put it on my list of awesome ECE books to
Exactly.
read.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah, you don't have to. I shouldn't have said that. You don't have to read it only if you have kids. But that's why I'm reading it. I'm not necessarily reading it for my early childhood life. My teachery life. I'm reading it for my own personal life and trying to apply it and be more mindful about how I speak with my own children.
Always learning. Sign of an expert.
Yes, if this is your first podcast listening, I have four children. They're 10, 8, 5, and 1. So busy life.
And you have time to pod, to podcast.
Yeah, I actually
And
look.
you have time to start a new school.
Yeah.
And you have time to get up at the crack of dawn and CrossFit.
Right.
You really like to cram it all in.
I do. And that's something that we're going to talk about too is a balance between work and like how to balance and you have to take care of yourself. So that listen to that podcast when that one
Okay.
comes up too.
I think that one should probably be next.
Yeah.
Just saying, since we're already talking
Okay.
about it.
So
More things
what
about being a
else?
professional. I have more things on my list.
Yes.
I want to make sure
Tell
I get
me.
through my list. One
Tell
of
me.
them that I also circled and starred is being a little annoying. Which is another way to say be assertive. Do you ever have those kids in your class that you're like, oh, they're assertive? Do you know what I mean when I say that?
Yes, yes.
Yeah. I think part of being heard is not settling for not being heard.
Mm-hmm.
And continuing to say the same thing in different ways until someone is able to hear what you're saying. And that sometimes means being a little annoying.
Totally.
And I think that that is not always a bad thing to be a little annoying.
Mm-hmm.
You know, okay. if it's a matter, you know, you're talking to your boss about being developmentally appropriate and they're like, yeah, I don't have time for this. Keep at it. Keep bringing new research to the table. Keep bringing a new slant on things, just like you would do with a tough kid. You wouldn't you wouldn't just give up on a kid. Don't give up on your ideals. Don't give up on your ideas.
Right.
Keep pushing and trying different angles until you find something that works.
I like that. So that can also be, when I think of that being annoying and how it applies to my families at the preschool that I'm the director of, I think of that as, okay, so people see information, you have to like present it in like three different ways or more in order for people to see it one time. So if that's emailing something, if that's putting a piece of paper with an article that pertains to play-based learning or child-centered learning or whatever risk, whatever you want to talk about or article that you want to give them, that's making sure they have a piece of paper in their hands. And then it can also, you can do it through social media too, like Facebook, posting, oh, here's an article that I like and linking it for families. I don't know. Is that kind of the annoying?
Like, you feel when you're doing all those three things, or four things, or however many, it's like, oh, they're like, I must sound like a broken record. I can't believe. But no, that it's not that case. It takes that long for somebody to hear it and remember it and process it.
Totally. And I think that, you know, when you're in the thick of running or being a teacher at or believing in play-based learning, and that young children learn through play, it's your life and you live it and you feel like everybody else should just know that.
Yeah.
And they don't. And no matter how much you talk to them, they maybe only hear like, you know, 10% of what you say. But if you can give it to them in many other ways, maybe they'll learn more.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't addressed the how do we get society as a whole to hear us more.
Mm.
And that is a tough one.
That is a tough one.
I think, feel like we're moving in the right direction.
I think so, too. Society as a whole, that's a tough one. I mean, do you see that as becoming, getting into more of like the political realm of things?
I think so. That might be part of it.
Are you a political person? Would you?
No, not by nature.
Me neither.
I feel like the older I get, the more I get fired up about it.
Right.
But my nature is like, we should all just get along. I don't want to talk about this. But I think that is part of why it's hard for early childhood professionals, especially, to be heard, is because we're all the helpers.
Mm-hmm.
We're all the, not all of us, but just the nature of caring for kids that young and having that much patience and mm-hmm. having that much compassion leads you to not want to, you know, get in yelling matches about things or really stand your ground. If it comes to a kid, then any of us in a second would do that. But when it comes to the profession of as a whole, I feel like as a whole, we're not the most fire and brimstone.
Right.
As opposed to other professions.
I think that there's a lot of like daycare or childcare professional type groups in people's communities. So I think maybe check into that in your community.
Yeah.
Like if you're a daycare provider, a childcare provider, look into the local childcare group that might be in your area. They're all called different things. But that might be a really good way. I know that one of the teachers that works at Butterfly Hill, she used to be a child care provider in a child care center, and there was some big like changes going on top level government. And they, to like take a stand, they took diapers and they would write their message on a diaper, and then like daycare providers all over the state were sending diapers in to the Capitol. And
whoa.
Yes,
that's so awesome.
they were heard because they did, went about it in a different way. So I mean, that's maybe a way. Maybe we just need to find a different way to show what we know that's a little bit unexpected.
Yeah. Connecting with other professionals is another great way.
Yeah.
There's power in numbers. And connecting with other schools in your area, whether that be preschools or older grade schools, middle schools.
Yeah. So what do you do? Okay, so in our community, there tends to be like a separation between all of the preschools in town because we're all kind of fighting for the same kids. And so there's like this little, you know, everybody's super nicey nice to each other, but nobody would ever email somebody else for help or call for help on anything. So how do you connect programs where there's, you're all fighting for the same kids because that's how you keep your doors open? But we're all in it for the same reasons.
Same reasons?
Yeah.
Ah, that's a tough one. Because there is that level of competition. Mm-hmm. You want families to like you the,
like
best,
the best
and go to your school.
right? Yeah.
But at the same time, how do you acknowledge that each school is different and what each family needs is different?
Right. I know. And then to try to like connect with the other professionals at those organizations when maybe they don't necessarily want to connect with you.
Yeah, that's tough.
That is tough. I don't know, maybe.
Maybe you don't start with the competitive preschool next door. Maybe you start with other preschools in the state.
Yeah.
And work your way up.
Hey, that's a great idea. Very good. I like that.
Progress. Yeah. Continuous progress.
Do you have anything else on your list?
I think being articulate is part of it.
Okay.
Part of being professional. If you show up and don't sound like you know what you're talking about,
mm-hmm.
it's hard for people to hear you.
Right.
And that is a harsh truth in my mind, but it is true that even if you're very well-researched and you are an expert in your field, if you can't articulate to other people, whether that's through writing or through talking or, I don't know, video recording, if you can't articulate that in a way that people can hear, then they'll miss your point every time.
Right. I can totally see that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So come in knowing what you're going to say sometimes.
Sometimes.
Gonna talk about. Yeah.
Yeah. See, I struggle with, it's kind of that imposter syndrome because I look at, like, I try to write, like, you know, blog posts and things for the families in our program for them to read. And I always think, oh, this is horrible. Like, somebody else could do so much better at this. And it's like that where you see everybody else's work and yours is just not as good. And so then you're like, should I even put it out there?
Yes.
Put it out there?
Put it out there. Yes.
What if it's not articulate and you think it is?
that's a whole nother problem, right?
That
I think you should always put it out there, which this is a personal struggle because I have several blog posts written that I just haven't published because I'm nervous to post them.
I do too. Yes.
I get nervous. But my advice to anyone would be always put it out there because you can't grow without the criticism.
Right.
You can't grow without other people connecting to your ideas.
Right.
You need that to grow as a writer or as an expert. You can't become more articulate without trying first. I'm picturing, did you ever play The Sims? Was that a video game
no.
you ever played?
It wasn't. My daughter plays it, though.
You had to up your charisma points by standing in front of a mirror. You slimy baba. And then you're like,
seriously?
You would gain charisma points, and then people would listen to you better.
Oh,
and the moral
my
of that story is that if you don't practice, just like any other skill, you won't get better at it.
Charisma. I love. Maybe that's what you need to
you need
be.
To stand in front of a mirror
expertise.
And speak a made-up language until your blue bar fills up.
I like it. All right. Should we?
Are we ready?
Ready for what? Do you have one or should I do one?
You should do one.
Okay. Let me get my page up. Okay. So, all right. All right. I like this one.
Okay.
If Jurassic Park were real, would you visit?
I had a dream about this last night.
No.
I was in Jurassic Park, but it was the scary version, not the like theme park version. If it was just like a zoo,
no,
that was safe.
I'm talking like Jurassic Park the movie, not theme park.
Well, it's
like,
a theme park.
Like it's the well, I know, but it's not. I'm talking like
just dinosaurs on an island, and I have to fight for my life the whole time. That doesn't sound as fun.
No. Okay, I don't know. Okay, well, tell me what would you do?
How about I answer both of them?
Okay,
if
answer
it was the actual theme park and it was not destined to fail.
Okay, that's where I was going with it. Like, if it was destined to fail.
You do want it to be destined to fail?
Yeah, I want it to be like.
Then no, after my dream last night, no. I'd be down for the helicopter ride around. I want to see the dinosaurs in real life.
Yeah.
That would be amazing.
What if the pterodactyls came after you, though? Like, and swooped in on your helicopter ride?
That sounds miserable. Dinosaurs are scary. The kids don't understand. They are scary.
Okay, so if it wasn't destined to fail.
Then I'd be there in a heartbeat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would, too. Mm-hmm. But not if it was.
Money for years. To go down.
Oh, funny. Oh, my gosh. Jurassic Park's a good movie. I haven't seen Jurassic World, though.
Oh, it's great.
Is it?
We've been doing storytelling a lot lately, inspired by Bev Boss.
Oh.
So much love for her. And one of the kids just retells the story of Jurassic Park every day. Jurassic World.
Oh, my
gosh.
And
I have to write the word Andominus Rex quickly. Like 30 times. It's funny.
It's good. Funny. All right.
Would you go see the dinosaurs?
I would go. If it wasn't destined to fail, I would totally go. That would be super cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'd get a t-shirt that said I was there.
Dr. Malcolm says that it's always destined to fail.
Who's Dr. Malcolm?
He's the guy with the water on his hand, and it always drips down the back.
Oh, I love it. Oh, my gosh.
Oh.
All right.
Well, Kristen.
Well, Tiffany.
It's been fun. We'll see you next time on Q&A with TK.
Bye.
This has been Q&A with T and K. Thank you for listening. From serious to silly, Tiffany and Kristen are eager to answer your questions. Just email them to q4tnk@gmail.com. That's q4tandk@gmail.com. We'll be back next week with another episode. Music by Kurt Pearsall, Tiffany's sweet, sweet hubby.
This has been an Explorations Early Learning Upstairs Studio production.
Oh.